Hello, I'm Donald James. This is number 0512, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0512. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, father and son morticians Michael and Kyle Sherwood on their unique method to preserve your tattoos after death, no matter the size.
A tattoo is a person's life history. Every tattoo has a meaning in most cases. And we don't say, this is a great tattoo, great artistry. We say that is a tattoo that person wanted for a reason in most cases. So as far as size-wise, it's not limited. My son and I, we had a person a couple months ago that had a whole full body tattoo. And they wanted everything preserved. And he had unbelievable artwork.
Dr. Frieda Birnbaum on whether it's a good idea to date your best friend or one of your coworkers.
It's a very tricky situation because at one hand you have a possibility for having a solid relationship, even marriage, and isn't that important to everyone? But then again, if it fails, then you have to stay with that person, almost live with that person in the office and suffer the consequences as well. So you have to make a choice. What is worse for you, to have tried and failed or to live with the failure?
Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter goes to the books as Anna Porter gives an inside view to the volatile world of Canadian book publishing with In Other Words. So find out what really went on between the covers soon on the Stuff File Program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you that this was show number 0512, was voiceover specialist and dear friend Donald James. You can check out his website at voice-overs.net. That's voice-overs.net. And of course, all you have to do is go to our website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number that Donald just mentioned, and you'll find links to his website. See how it all goes full circle? Yeah. Thank you very much, Donald, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? While students at Holy Family Catholic School in Port Allen, Louisiana, took a field trip to Washington, D.C. to learn about their nation's founding and visit historic sites, their principal, 47-year-old Michael Como, had another kind of sightseeing in mind. In the pre-dawn hours of May 31st, police were called to Archibald's Gentleman's Club, a strip joint in D.C., after an intoxicated man refused to pay his bill. Officers found Como standing in a roadway, refusing to move. He was arrested for public intoxication and possession of an open container of alcohol. Como immediately resigned his position as principal, along with his role as a reserve police officer at the Brushley Police Department. Wow. Oh, I hope those strippers were worth it. What is it with all that pent-up Catholic guilt that seems to bring out the worst in people? It always seems to be the religiously tightly wound who want to get their freak on the minute they leave home. I don't know. Speaking as a Protestant myself, maybe it's the idea of confession. Maybe it's the idea of periodically emptying your sin bank that makes people want to refill it in interesting ways. Anyway. Police in Boise, Idaho, received a report that a man was enjoying the pleasure of his own company and looking in windows in a residential neighborhood. They found 39-year-old Jonathan Parker, saw that he was near his estranged wife's home in alleged violation of a restraining order, and arrested him. Police say Parker was hiding in the bushes, wearing a wig as a disguise. Parker was defended in court by former Idaho Attorney General David Leroy, who told the judge the whole thing was a grand misunderstanding. The judge apparently understood things better than Leroy thought. He set Parker's bond at $80,000 and ordered him to stay at least 500 feet away from his wife. How did Parker get the AG to defend him? Well, Parker is a political lobbyist and the former Idaho Republican Party chairman. He resigned the latter post 3 months ago and wrote in his resignation letter, "The reason was so that I can focus on the priorities I place above all others." And now we know what that meant. Interesting priorities. An unidentified man in Tuscumbia, Alabama, did what so many of us do every day. He went online to Amazon to order household items. But when his package arrived on May 23rd, he was alarmed to discover a urine sample from a private citizen, not the shower curtain and rings he had ordered. An Amazon representative said the company was very sorry about the mistake and would send his bathroom accessories right away, but declined to have him return the sample. You know, somewhere out there is someone who sent in a urine sample for testing and is baffled as to why they received a shower curtain. What must be going through their mind? Yeah. Don't mess with Texas or with 41-year-old Doris Vallejo Godoy of Austin, who pulled a gun on a man at a Mexican restaurant. The June 2nd scuffle began as a disagreement about who should be up next for karaoke. The man told police that as they argued, Doris struck him, then pulled out her gun and pointed it at him. She also threatened a waitress who tried to intervene. Police arrived as Doris was arguing in the parking lot with her girlfriend. She was arrested for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and unlawful carrying of a concealed weapon. Okay, full disclosure. I'm not a fan of karaoke. I believe that the word karaoke is Japanese for tone deaf. But I'm also willing to believe that if you're so desperate to sing next at a karaoke bar that you would pull a gun, you're probably not the kind of person most of us would want to hear sing out loud anyway. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, you know, I did a call-in and interview radio show for 20 years, and when it comes to calls, you just can't let everyone who calls in on the air. It's just common sense. Calls have to be screened. Because frankly, there are a few morons out there. I bring this up because of a Pennsylvania television station's talkback segment that they do in their newscasts. People call in to record their voice, and during the evening news, their pithy statements are played back. Now, recently, Pennsylvania has seen an unusually high number of tornadoes already this year. Scientists aren't exactly sure what's behind the uptick, but one Pennsylvania resident has a theory. Traffic circles. No, I'm not making this up. Here's the call.
We didn't have tornadoes here until we started putting into traffic circles. Because on the kind of, you want to know why? When people go round and round in circles, it causes disturbance in the atmosphere and causes tornadoes.
Wow. I am reminded of what I used to say off air to my producer on occasion. Why are some people allowed to have phones? I mean, these are usually the same people who aren't allowed outside unsupervised. Anyway. Let's get to our first guests here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Even when you die, your body ink may live on forever. That's thanks to a father and son mortician team in Cleveland, Ohio. Michael and Kyle Sherwood are the folks behind Save My Ink Forever. They preserve a person's body art after they have passed on to the next realm. Michael and Kyle join us together via Skype from Cleveland. Hi, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Jess Tickety-Boo, thanks very much for being on the program with us. I gotta ask, how did you guys come up with this idea?
I'll let you handle that one.
probably a lot of beer, actually. A couple of my friends are all writers and whatnot, and The one day my friend came up and said, hey, it would be a great idea if I could have one of my tattoos preserved and hung up in the clubhouse. And that got us, we were thinking that would be a great idea. And it went from there.
Okay, so having the idea is one thing, but how do you execute it? I mean, was there a trial and error method into doing this? What needs to be done?
So, you know, it's kind of hard to obviously get tattoos to practice on and so forth. So what we did for kind of a learning experience, a learning curve, is we were paying for people to get a tummy tuck. So they would get a tattoo on the area where the skin was going to be grafted off from the tummy tuck. And for us paying for it, we would then get the tattoo to, again, kind of go through the trial and error of the tattoo preservation. And so it took us roughly, 2 years?
A lot of tummy tucks.
about 2 years to perfect the preservation of what it is now, to where we feel comfortable. We felt comfortable, you know, taking it to a commercial level.
To your knowledge, are you the only people, the only morticians doing this?
We are the only people doing it, period.
And what do others in your industry have to say about this?
I mean, they're cool with it in the sense that, you know, we are in the service industry and we are here to fulfill loved ones' wishes, you know, their final wishes. And so I guess the big thing is, as long as it's not hurting anybody else, why not?
Now, there are tattoos and then there are tattoos. You know, there's some people who have complete body art. There are some people that have a little butterfly someplace. There are some people that have entire sleeves. Could you do any or all of those, or are you limited to a certain size of tattoo?
We're actually not limited to any size. And how we feel, a tattoo is a person's life history. I mean, it's every tattoo has a meaning in most cases. And we don't say, oh, this is a great tattoo, great artistry. We say that is a tattoo that person wanted, and it for a reason in most cases. So as far as size-wise, it's not limited. My son and I, we had a person a couple months ago that had a whole full body tattoo, and they wanted everything preserved, and he had unbelievable artwork. But then again, we get some of these other tattoos that to you and I might say, well, that's not that, but it's to that person, it's the greatest thing ever. It's a part of their life. So, yeah.
All shapes and sizes, quality. All right.
I'm going on the assumption that your process to you guys is some sort of trade secret. Would that be correct?
Of course.
Yeah. So somebody else, another mortician, couldn't go about doing it the way you do it, because that's something that you're literally taking to your graves.
Yeah. No. It's our trade secret. It is our Coca-Cola recipe, or our McDonald's Big Mac sauce, if you will.
Yeah. So I know you can't tell us how and what you do, but I've seen pictures of it, and I've noticed that it appears that the tattoos and the skin area seem, if I'm not mistaken, lighter than it would be on the person. Is that correct?
Yeah, it does come out a little bit lighter, but we do that purposely because we want the art to kind of come through, so you're not so much focused on the color of the skin pigment.
Okay, so once you do this, how is it preserved? What form do people get it in, or the loved ones get it in?
So primarily it is archival quality framing. So we have the framing with the UV protective glass and so forth. So we keep everything up to museum standards as far as how you display a piece of art.
How many of these have you done so far?
A couple hundred.
Several hundred, yeah.
And when you first started doing this, did you feel this was something that was going to be successful, or did you have some doubts and qualms about it yourself?
No. I always thought it was going to be successful. As a matter of fact, I think it's even still a little bit ahead of its time. You know, there's 42 million people currently in the United States alone with tattoos. And the way that the trend is going with tattoos, you know, you're seeing the social breakdown of, you know, the taboo that were previously associated with tattoos. As far as, you know, the only people that had tattoos were criminals or, you know, people in the service. Whereas now it's all walks of life. You have doctors, you have lawyers, you know, we're breaking down the walls of, you know, how tattoos are socially acceptable in the workplace. So I see this, the tattoo trend continuing to increase as we continue to break down those social taboos with tattoos.
I'm assuming this is something that you offer in addition to the usual funeral services that you offer as morticians, correct?
Well, a good example is this mother called us up a couple months ago and said, "Hey, listen, my son passed away. He has a very meaningful tattoo because he's always had it, and they're used to seeing him with that tattoo." And the mom was talking to some of his friends that actually told her about us, and she goes, "You know what?" She goes, "Mike," she goes, "I just don't want my son given back to me in an urn and say, 'Hey, this is my son.'" We did a chest piece on him, and we framed it, gave it back along with an urn, and she said that was like the greatest thing. That was a piece of him that I can recall seeing on him all the time, and that's what brings that memory back.
Well, the reason why I ask about is it an add-on to the services you already offer is because I'm trying to understand monetarily, what does it add as far as cost to whatever you normally do with the body, either cremation or burial?
It's a smaller cost, and I guess the relative term of things. So like a 5-inch by 5-inch tattoo would be $1,599, and that includes everything. So the surgical excision of the tattoo, all of the shipping, the framing, again, all up to archival standards, and the preservation. So the full length of time period that we're working with this family and this tattoo is anywhere between 3 and 4 months. So, you know, if you break down the cost of, you know, $1,599 to the time period that we're investing into this, we consider that a relatively small amount.
And we're trying to make it affordable for everybody because this is something the families want. So instead of charging a lot and doing very few, we would rather do a lot of tattoos, charge very little, and have everybody make out in the long run.
And so our pricing goes up $100 per inch. So 6x6 would be $16.99, 7x7, $17.99, and so forth. And then when you get into the larger tattoos, the full chest piece, the full back pieces and sleeves and so forth, we do offer kind of customized pricing as well as discount on multiple tattoos. So you compare $15.99 to, you know, a $7,000 headstone or a $4,000 casket. Again, we would say we're fairly affordable.
Since this is something that is unique to you guys, are you getting inquiries from other morticians who, even though they can't do it, are coming to you because their client wants this done?
Oh, yeah. And that's one of those things. We've established a network with other funeral homes, you know, that are willing to offer our services and cooperate with us and, you know, offer this memorial tribute to families. So, again, we're in the service industry, so if it's been a family's wish where they've come to the funeral director and said, you know, this is the company that does this, we'd like you to work with them, all the funeral homes have been really perceptive to it.
You're getting a lot of media attention. In other words, you're getting a lot of ink about the ink. So what kind of attention have you been drawing outside of, you know, talking to me, for instance? How worldwide has this become for you guys?
It's starting to kind of really take off because it is, you know, so unique and one of a kind. But, you know, we've been doing interviews through the UK, Canada, Brazil, Mexico. BBC. Just everyone is kind of intrigued about it. And, you know, we're happy to answer any questions that anybody has. You know, break down some of the stereotypes or negative thoughts that people may have about what we do. Because again, we do it with the most upright integrity, and treat each person and each tattoo as if it was, you know, from one of our loved ones.
Well, congratulations on what you guys have accomplished. People can find out more information by going to your website, right?
Yeah, our website. We have a Facebook page, you know, that we kind of post some dry humor stuff on there, you know, lighthearted. And then we have our Instagram, which is Save My Ink, but with a 4 and for forever. And we post updates on, you know, tattoos that we've done and so forth, you know, when family gives us permission to use their images.
Again, congratulations and thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Love to hear from you. Thank you so much.
Michael and Kyle Sherwood, the father and son morticians behind Save My Ink Forever. You can check out their website at savemyink.tattoo, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0512, and you'll find the link to their page. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about dating co-workers and best friends, plus Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter, and we also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts button located on the website at thestufffile.com, and whichever platform you listen to for this program, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciate it. Well, let's get back to the stuff. And you know, I just want to do a quick public service announcement here. In the last couple of days, I have come across two disturbing stories about Chernobyl. As you may be aware, there is a new hit TV show on from HBO that retells the story of the 1986 Chernobyl nuclear power plant disaster. Now, about 4 days ago, while listening to ESPN Radio, I heard one of the hosts lament about the fact that he was overhearing a conversation between two women, one younger, one older. The younger woman, in her 20s, was gushing over the HBO series and talking about it in the same breathy way that many talked about Game of Thrones. Apparently, she had no idea that it was a real story, a part of modern history. I'm beginning to wonder if they're not teaching anything in school these days. But that wasn't the worst incarnation of Chernobyl news for me this week. This past weekend, I was reading an article on the BGR website. They cover news and commentary focused on mobile and consumer electronics markets. In a story written by Andy Meek, it says that HBO's Chernobyl is so popular that it's having unintended side effects. And when you think of Chernobyl, you think of unintended side effects, don't you? The region around the power plant is becoming an increasingly popular backdrop for Instagrammers who presumably want to spice up their feed. The 1986 incident remains the worst and most catastrophic such accidental nuclear plant explosion in the world. And the show is fueling curiosity to the plant so much that many people want to go and check it out for themselves and snap pictures of themselves doing so. One tour agency in the Chernobyl area, and that's, by the way, a sentence I never thought I would ever say, told Reuters it's seen a 40% spike in business since the HBO show started airing in May. And when I hear the word Chernobyl, I don't want to hear about a 40% spike in anything. Anyway, Reuters goes on to note that the area around the decommissioned nuclear plant today feels like a post-apocalyptic wasteland with stray dogs roaming and abandoned trash-strewn buildings. Do you get the feeling that this is literally the Darwin effect at work? I mean, people are flocking to a radioactive site to get pictures of themselves for their Instagram. Can pleasure tours to the Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan be far behind? Dear Lord, what is wrong with these people? Although in the long run, this could be a self-correcting problem. Anyway, 25-year-old Damon Hudson of St. Ives, England, first noticed his missing milk delivery on May 17th. Said Hudson, "My milk delivery means the world to me. My little brother and sister can't function without their cereal in the morning." He could see the thief on his doorbell video footage, but he didn't want to bother the police with such a trivial case, so after 2 weeks of going milkless, he set up his own sting. Hudson introduced a couple of new ingredients to the milk bottle, fish oil, and his own urine. "Hopefully that's the end. The weirdo deserves it," Hudson said. No word on whether the thief has found a new target. Though I'll bet that's now a person who is crying over spilt milk. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, you know, dating apps have advantages and disadvantages. The advantage is that you can skip most of the social intercourse that usually precedes sexual intercourse. You can skip the time and effort of meeting people, skip the social rituals involved in getting to know them, and in many cases, you can skip the rejection that so frequently comes with finding out that the person you've been getting to know is not interested in you. The disadvantage, of course, is getting robbed in the middle of the night while you are locked in a closet with a ball gag in your mouth. That was the unfortunate fate of one New York man who was allegedly robbed by a date that he met on Grindr. Police responded to a call of a home invasion robbery around 3 a.m. at the 26-year-old victim's apartment. The man told police he met his date in a section of the app called Black Men Love Fisting. Okay. He said the two men had consensual intercourse that included latex bottles, rubber gloves, a leash, and a sex swing. Wow. Does any of this stuff have to be assembled like the stuff you get from IKEA? Anyway, they got into an argument over the small size of the perp's privates, leading him to choke the victim and demand cash. Everyone's a critic. The victim told police he thought it was part of the fantasy until his date allegedly dragged him into the closet and took $3,000. The victim reported that he tried to scream when he realized he was being robbed, but couldn't because he had a jock strap and a ball gag in his mouth. The robber fled and the victim was treated on the scene. Cops took latex gloves, a dildo, and the sex swing as evidence. Police canvassed the area, but didn't find the attacker. Well, judging by the date they had, there should be enough DNA lying around the place to keep on file, because I'm guessing this perp isn't new to this crime. Anyway, speaking of dating, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Is it a good idea to date a coworker? Is it a good idea that you date your best friend? Those are a couple of relationship questions that we put to Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power? An In-Depth Study of the Professional Woman in a Relationship. She joins us on the line right now from New Jersey. Hi, Dr. Frieda.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Thanks for being back on the program with us once again.
Thank you.
So the idea of dating a coworker. I know some companies that used to frown on this. I know some companies that used to encourage this. Where do you stand on this situation?
It's a very tricky situation because at one hand you have a possibility for having a solid relationship, even marriage, and isn't that important to everyone? But then again, if it fails, then you have to stay with that person, almost live with that person in the office and suffer the consequences as well. So you have to make a choice. What is worse for you, to have tried and failed or to live with the failure?
But isn't that very similar to what goes on in life from the time we start dating? I mean, the first people we start to date are people we usually go to school with, either in high school or in college. And if it doesn't work out there, you're pretty much stuck with them in the same situation. Your circle of friends are usually the same. You might even be in the same classes. So isn't it very similar to what it is in the work situation?
It isn't. It is not, because in the work situation, there are status and roles that are applied. So if you're dating your boss, are you going to get the raise? Will you not get the raise if you break up? So it's much more complicated than just being with that circle. I understand what you're saying. And then you're seeing the fact that you are looking at this person within close proximity every day. You're aware, is that person happy? You're studying each other. Is that person dating again? You hear rumors. So similar to other groups and similar to other relationship situations, you are seeing this person every single day, let's say from 9 to 5 solid, without any type of break, unless you have to change the dynamics of the relationship, where you would actually have to move into a different office if it gets that uncomfortable. But then other people also feel that you're getting, you know, special privileges, or the two of you are being watched because you're not supposed to be dating. Then do you go to different companies? So dating a boss is very fragile because people think you're getting favors. Then when you're breaking up, then you have to look and see, are there consequences for that? Because then again, you may be demoted in some way or some emotional way. And when you're dating someone of equal status, then the question is, once you break up again, is that going to get in the way? Is that tension going to get in the way between the two of you to do the appropriate work? So there is a plus side to it as well, because if it does go well, what is more important? You have a wonderful relationship, and then you can work elsewhere. So that's a really fine line of trying to make the right kind of decision for yourself, depending on the outcome.
So based on the pros and the cons, how do you feel generally about dating a coworker? Or do you feel it's a situation that is involves each individual situation and is not connected to another?
I would date the coworker, because who cares? You know, we have to be able to be comfortable with where we work and what it is that we want. If there's sexual tension between someone and there's the recognition that you're interested in that person, that's really very important. You know, even today, who you're working with is important. Being comfortable in the workplace is important. And your own individual relationship comes first before anything else. Hopefully you can get that job somewhere else, but absolutely don't miss out on a good possibility.
Now, on the other side of the coin, talking about best friends, you often hear people say, well, I dated or I married my best friend. Is it a good idea to date your best friend?
Is it a good idea to date your best friend? Well, you know, if you don't date your best friend, eventually you're going to break up, because it's already going in a different direction. If you can stay platonic, that's one thing. But when the relationship gets very sexually involved, where you can feel that connection and that attraction for each other, I don't know if you have a choice to say, well, he will or she will remain my best friend. And if you go forward, it could be the best thing that could happen to you, of course, because you know each other and you're comfortable with each other. You have fun together, and you don't have to always have that appearance and your guard up together. But then again, there's negativity to having that prior friendship relationship.
Well, let's ask the question from the point of view, regardless of whether it's a heterosexual or homosexual relationship, is it possible to be best friends with someone you could be attracted to?
No, you can't. You know, when you're with the opposite sex or the same sex, whatever your orientation is, when you have that feeling, you're already going in a different direction and it never goes back there. And so if you are prone to have gay relationships and you're with someone of the same sex and you see that person a lot, yes, that's going to open up other possibilities, because in proximity, close proximity, these things do happen. And, you know, there's always sexual tension if you're even seeing someone for lunch together, if you're confiding in that person together. So it brings in a familiar feeling of who that person is. But watch out, because those familiar feelings and that trusting bond can easily be broken once you go into the other aspect of that relationship, because it can be used against you. You know, when couples argue, they use all kinds of ammunition to upset the other person. You know, I always hated your mother, you're ugly, you're fat, you're stupid, whatever it takes. So if you give them information that they're privileged to later on, you have to know that those secrets are out there and you can be very vulnerable to this relationship you had in the past.
Now, is it possible that part of the problem in said relationships is somebody else taking things the wrong way? And I'll give you a personal example. I grew up living literally next to the girl next door. She was one of my closest friends. We remained friends all of our lives. We did not date. But other people had problems with our friendship because they were jealous of it, even though we did not date.
Well, in what way were they jealous?
Well, for instance, if I'm going out with somebody, they don't like the fact that one of my best friends is a girl. And the same thing on her end, when she dated, some of her boyfriends didn't like that one of her best friends was a boy.
And you know they were right. I hate to say this. Don't throw anything at me. Because we're too far away, I'm happy to say. But the reason they were right is because very often, that more often than not, these relationships have a tendency to go in a different direction and they didn't trust it. So they know, they knew that the potential was there and they didn't want to have to put up with it. So it's wonderful you have this relationship, that you didn't have any type of sexuality between the two of you, and you enjoyed each other. Are you still friends,
yes,
by the way?
Yes.
You still are?
Yes.
And you're married?
I'm not. She's been living with somebody for the last 20-some-odd years.
And that person's okay with it?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So this is very special. And it's something that you're very fortunate to have, because you can learn from each other this way. And what happens is, you're right, people do interfere. They're either jealous, they don't believe you, and they feel that bond that you have with each other is going to be stronger than any bond with any other friendship. So you have to really be strong to maintain this, and I do give you a lot of credit, because it is special once you can have that kind of confidant in your life.
But you said earlier that one of the other parties in the situation doesn't trust that it's just a platonic relationship. Isn't the very basis of a relationship the trust factor?
Yes, it is. But when things happen, there is jealousy. If you were dating someone and this, let's say this female, saw that you were taking out to lunch another female that you're saying is your friend, what does that really imply? What does that friendship really mean? You know, people think into all kinds of situations. What do you talk about? Because it is known that when you confide in someone else, it starts out that way, and then that other person understands you, and you feel closer to that person, you appreciate that person, and then it grows into a mutual understanding that often develops into a sexual relationship, because you feel cared about in a way that no other person has done for you. So that's why they feel that way, and they have every right to feel that way. The sad part is that they're wrong, that they're wrong about certain people, such as yourself, and it's difficult for you to try to prove it to them. But if you have a situation where that other person's not jealous, that other person does believe, so it's a foundation and it's a basis for a long-term relationship.
Dr. Frieda, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for being with us once again.
Thank you.
Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, author of What Price Power? An In-Depth Study of the Professional Woman in a Relationship. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the page for this show, which is show number 0512, and you'll find links to Dr. Frieda's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Stick around. There's more Stuff File coming your way in a moment.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we are ready to stop the presses, or is it start the presses? One of the way we'll press the presses or iron the presses. Anyway, Stuart Nauman is here with another edition of Book Banter. Hello, Stu.
Hello, Peter. That sounded like a classic Marx Brothers routine if you would have continued on.
That was two weeks ago. That was 2 weeks ago.
That was two weeks ago. Yeah. Where, you know, what happened? Where was that 2 weeks ago when we did the previous segment?
Well, I'm on a 2 week delay. It's a little longer than a 7 second delay.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. And that's quite a delay. So we're going to keep the presses rolling on this edition of Book Banter. And, you know, we're going to talk about book publishing and publishing legends. And speaking of publishing legend, you know, I was sad to hear about, well, Herman Wouk's passing a few weeks ago at the age of 103.
Yes.
The man was a legend. I mean, he did a lot of best-selling books for his publishers, which were Doubleday and Little Brown. And I started rereading the Caine Mutiny, which won him a Pulitzer, and I have a paperback edition of it from 1954, the time the movie came out. Great book. I see the movie so many times. This book really terrific. Now I know why it at the time sold 2 million copies and won a Pulitzer Prize.
Yep, he was an amazing writer who actually wrote his last book not that long ago. So he was working almost right to the end.
Yeah, he was 102 when the last book, The Lawgiver, was published.
Yeah.
That's amazing. A lifetime in publishing.
Amazing. And speaking of publishing, that's what you want to talk about on this week's edition of Book Banter.
That's right, lifetimes in publishing, because we're going to talk about Anna Porter. You see, Anna Porter arrived in Canada in 1968, and when she did arrive here, she found an interesting way of how she warmed to her third and final home country, books, in particular, Canadian books. An avid reader with a fondness for a story that is well told, Porter lived the Canadian dream through the volatile world of book publishing as an editor, executive, publisher, and best-selling author, first at the legendary Canadian publishing house McClellan & Stewart, then at the paperback publisher Seal Books, then her own imprint, Key Porter Books. Now, she at that time, she came at the right time, and she was a witness. This is back in the 70s. She was a witness to the growing Canadian publishing scene during that decade of the 70s, where she got first-hand experience of working alongside some of Canada's best-known writers like Mordecai Richler, Farley Mowat, Margaret Lawrence, Leonard Cohen, Margaret Atwood, and helping to develop and promote some of the greatest books that brought Canada into the global literary forefront, such as The Canadian Establishment, The Diviners, and Sarah Rin's Horsemen.
Now, you mentioned that she came to Canada and it was her third country. Where did she come from?
Well, she was originally born in Hungary,
and fled, Hungary at the time of the 1956 revolution, and then settled in New Zealand and lived there for 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she likes living in countries that are in the shadow of a bigger country.
Yes, so to speak, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, literally. But in between all that, she got plenty of first-hand lessons of how the Canadian book publishing industry was a constant struggle for survival. And through it all, Anna Porter's discovery of Canada through the books she helped develop has been quite a cultural trip, which she recounts in all of its page-by-page glory in a recently published memoir, In Other Words. Now, it's filled with plenty of interesting behind-the-scenes anecdotes of how she helped to strengthen the world of modern Canadian literature and publishing, not to mention the characters that she met and worked with along the way. And one of the most dominant of that bunch, who gets more than his fair share of ink in this book, is the late Jack McClellan, the flamboyant, somewhat eccentric owner and CEO of the prestigious Canadian publishing house McClellan & Stewart. And he ran McClellan & Stewart as a prestige kind of venture. And based on a credo that he established, that McClellan & Stewart published authors, not books. To him, that was a difference.
Hmm.
And that's just what he did, and with an impressive lineup of some of the biggest names in Canadian writing, which I mentioned before, including one of my favorites, Pierre Burton, which has always been an inside joke for us, Peter.
Yes, because no one in this country has killed more trees than Pierre Burton. And I don't say that in a derogatory way. He's just very prolific with the books and the size of the books.
And they sold a lot of books, let me tell you. He made McClellan Stewart a lot of money, and so did he did the same for Doubleday. Now, Porter adopted that credo throughout her career in book publishing with her personal touch. Porter not only nurtured many of the writers she was assigned to edit their books, but also befriended them and treated them like the talented individuals that they were. Now, while the second half of the book focuses on Porter's success running her own imprint, Key Porter Books, and surprised at how it was a commercial success as a publisher of political books, especially former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien's blockbuster 1985 memoir, Straight from the Heart, which was a terrific read, I have to admit. She also focuses on how volatile the book publishing industry really was, based on many of her own personal observations and experiences in the trade, especially publishing companies being swallowed up by large business conglomerates, the draconian practices of certain publishers when it came to their respective book return policies, the decline of the independent bookstore, and how book publishing was more of a prestigious rather than lucrative business. So in other words, the book is an absorbing present at the creation type memoir, one woman's passion for books, book publishing, and authors, and how they all played a major role in shaping Canada's contemporary cultural heritage. It kind of makes the reader want to unearth their copies of their favorite Can-Lit books and rediscover how some of Canada's greatest modern writers helped build a national identity through the written and printed word.
You talk about her memoir, and you've discussed basically her imprint on Canadian writers.
Yeah.
How do you think those Canadian writers would have fared if it weren't for Anna Porter?
I don't think they would get, their books and themselves wouldn't be in the spotlight as much as, it wouldn't be in the spotlight as much. It would probably be, oh, yeah, good book, but it would probably, die on the bookshelves.
Mm.
You know, it was just that, for many years, Canadian publishers were basically, reprinting British and American books, under their imprint, under their company names, and selling it in Canada. And that was basically it. There wasn't a Canadian literary scene to speak of, really, until the 60s and 70s. And that's what really started. Jack McClellan did it, and Anna Porter continued his work.
So to use a Canadian analogy, she was the snowplow that cleared the streets for the Canadian writers.
Yes. You could say that. A good analogy. A pretty good one, Peter. Okay. But she did it all.
So the book is?
It's called In Other Words by Anna Porter. It's published by Simon & Schuster, the Canadian division of Simon & Schuster, and it's $32.
And dare I ask, what book would you recommend if you were to continue this genre?
Well, actually, there's a couple of books I could think of, but they're American, but they're terrific books. One called At Random by the late Bennett Cerf. Everyone knows Bennett Cerf. I mean,
You know what? I knew you were going to bring up Bennett Cerf. I just knew it.
Well, look, he was a major force in American publishing in the 20th century. He was the founder of Random House. and also for a lot of classic TV buffs, especially game show buffs, he was one of the panelists on What's My Line for the entire 17-year run. And he was always introduced as, you know, the publisher of Random House. And, you know, when, especially Arlene Francis mentioned, well, our next panelist is very happy because the latest Random House book is topping the bestseller list.
Yeah. If you had not mentioned Bennett Cerf in this little segment here, I was going to bring him up.
But it's a terrific book.
Yeah.
I mean, he gives a first-hand look at how this great publishing this great publisher was created, the great writers that he encountered and published. And basically, he said, yes, at that time when he started in 1924, book publishing was a gentleman's profession.
Yeah.
But he made it interesting. And finally, one very quickly, James A. Michener, who killed a lot of trees too in the United States.
I'm laughing because I jotted down James Michener's name because when we brought up Pierre Burton, I was going to toss his name in there. So I guess we're thinking alike.
Yeah, we're on the same page, no pun intended.
Yeah, and he had a lot of pages.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. About 50 years worth. But a book that he wrote in the 90s called The Novel, is one of his more smaller books, actually, dealt with the publishing industry and the focus of how a novel is created from conception to publication.
Fascinating.
It is. It was.
Yeah. Yeah. The trees he killed and the hernias he created.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, this week's book is?
It's called In Other Words by Anna Porter, published by Simon & Schuster, and it's $32.
And how can people find you, Mr. Nolman, sir?
Well, if I'm not under a pile of James A. Michener and Pierre Burton books struggling to get out.
Crushed by a bookcase, yes.
Yeah, you can find me in the pages of the Montreal Times, which doesn't kill a lot of trees like Michener and Burton did, every Saturday in print or every Friday digitally or on the website, www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
Thank you, and let me get my bulldozer ready because I'm ready to buy some more books.
Okay. Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about at the end of this racetrack here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. I've got a couple more Stuff File news stories I want to share with you, and also an idiot of the day here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Beachgoers looking to make a statement this summer will want to check out the Jido, a Speedo-style swimsuit brief for men that looks like it's cut from a pair of jeans, but is really made of polyester and spandex for comfort and quick drying. The retailer describes the faux denim look as, "It's like eating a bag of chips in church. Everyone looks over at you with disgust, but deep down, they want some too." The Jidos sell for $39.99 through shinesty.com. Okay. Seriously, who wants to eat chips in church? Actually, have you ever been in church and seen someone pigging out on anything? Never mind chips. As for the swimsuits, I actually think they're going to be quite popular. Yeah. A 19-year-old by the name of Nicholas Jones was pulled over by a sheriff's deputy in St. Johns County, Florida. But Jones said later, "As he was walking up to my car, I did a donut around him and left him." The deputy wasn't able to get the license plate number of the car, and Jones made a clean getaway. So how do we know his name? Well, about an hour later, Jones got nervous and called 911 to ask, like, "What are you guys doing? Because, like, he definitely got the plate number." Jones said he ran because he thought it would be fun. Dispatchers simply looked up the location of his phone and sent deputies, who arrested Jones on charges of reckless driving, fleeing and eluding, misusing 911, and yes, violating his probation from a previous case. Deputies told him they didn't know who he was until he called in. "That's funny," he replied. "So I told on myself?" Yes, you idiot. You told on yourself. And now the real fun begins. You know, I could have made this guy the idiot of the day, but I didn't. But we're at that point, boys and girls, because it's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff Off presents the idiot of the day.
Police in Lincoln, Nebraska responded to a call on May the 21st about a domestic assault. They didn't find the suspect, identified as 26-year-old Markel Towner, in the residence, but someone who matched his description was sitting outside in a car. When questioned, the man said his name was D'Angelo Towns, but a fashion faux pas led officers to suspect he was lying. A lanyard around the man's neck clearly bore the name Markel Towner. After some resistance, Towner was finally subdued and arrested on a variety of charges. Now, why? Oh, why? If you're going to lie to the police about what your name is, would you do so with a name tag dangling from around your neck? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0512. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0512. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. We leave you with this deep environmental thought. If we don't do something about global warming soon, eventually there won't be any ice floes left to put our elders on.